This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Some of us try and play the piano. It can be a hobby. It can be meditation even. But there are some people who can really play, who can make their fingers do amazing things with a few dozen black and white notes. To begin, here's two, Billy Brown and Peter O'Brien. We're going to eavesdrop into their world to find out what it's like to be the piano player, to have a passion for the piano.
My mother played the piano and my father played the violin, but there was always a piano in the house since before I was born. It was a Bechstein boudoir piano, a lovely piano actually. And so I probably started fiddling around with it as soon as I could kind of walk or crawl, you know.
I'll tell you what, we were talking about the loneliness of the long distance restaurant piano player.
Yes.
Yeah. I was halfway through, I think it may have been now, My Funny Valentine or some equally gorgeous piece of music. And there was a hum of conversation when I started to play the piece, and near the end when I was getting flamboyant, when I'd lost the run of myself, yeah. I noticed the complete silence in the restaurant and people were looking up. And I thought, goodness, I've cracked them. I've actually got them. So I finished the piece, you know. And go to this pit. Sort of a Yoko Ono one-hand clapping song. And I turned around, who's standing behind me? Phil Coulter had been standing. Oh. Coulter had been standing there for the past 5 minutes, skeptically eyeing all this.
Brilliant.
So, as a tribute to him.
Well, you see, Peter and Billy have been at the piano for a good few years now. So what about the younger types? Ruth McGinley is one of them. She's 17, from Derry, and is the BBC Young Musician of the Year. Here she is demonstrating some Rachmaninoff.
Mm-hmm.
goes into more singing guitar bits.
So what's the difference between playing that well and not playing it well? I mean, would you say some days when you're sounding good at playing that, is it in the touch, is it?
Yeah, well, in say the first bit, you need very clear, very much clarity, and so if your fingers aren't really listened up and working properly, it could sound just splodge, you know. So it needs to be very clear, which takes a lot of practice, and very slowly at the passage, even though in the end up it will be very, very fast. But really just taking each finger separately like that and working it from very high and a pulling position.
So your fingers are well up on the
Well up from the movement. And then whenever it comes to the cantabile bit like that, you have to take the tune at the top, which is something very hard with the piano, because once you hit the note, the sound dies.
Yes.
So really, to sing the phrase, it's very hard. So you have to really, it's mental as well as physical in cantabile bits like that, because you really have to think of the note moving into the next note so that the phrase continues on. But which is, it's easier to do on a stringed instrument or a wind instrument, because the note is actually continuing on, the sound's actually continuing.
On the subject of technique, and on a completely different note, one of the questions that has plagued many the person who has attempted the piano is, how does or how did Jerry Lee Lewis do it? Well, who better to ask as he sits at a Steinway than John Keogh?
I suspect it was probably, it fell easily for him. There was a little bit of country and there was this boogie thing. Because he liked these boogie left hands that he used to hear in these sort of gin houses. He used to literally cross the track and go to the gin houses to see them. But like, if you take a song like the Hank Williams song, You Win Again, which most country singers would do, it's very straight, and you'd have a sort of a, you know, a sort of a sweetie thing, but he...
The news is out all over town that you've been seen out running around. I know that I should leave, but then I just can't go. You win again.
And then there's a bit of country. But his most peculiar one was, I think it's a great example of people say, you know, how does Jerry Lee Lewis play? I think the great example of Jerry Lee Lewis is A Whole Lot of Shaking Going On, which is the most peculiar. He plays a basically, which is the old boogie riff, but he blocks it by playing the thumb and the little finger together, and then slides up and sort of gets it and puts a sustain on it, and you get this most peculiar rumble, and he just plays chops with his right hand, so you get a.
Coming over, baby, whole lot of shaking going on. If they're coming over, baby, baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking, we got a whole lot of shaking going on. As they're coming over, baby, now we got shaking in the barn.
And he does the most extraordinary sort of things, and he uses peculiar, his own fingering is totally of his own making. It looks impossible. And he sort of puts jams two fingers together like this, and he plays those ones, like, you know, the second finger, and the third finger, And it's most peculiar because most people would do that with their thumb and little finger or something. He's quite totally untutored manner of playing and highly influenced by Boulton. And I've seen him playing live twice, for the first time just, you know, in the last year and a half. And even songs that he would have done maybe differently on his records, he nearly always starts all his concert stuff with. And he starts everything slow, just a nightmare for drummers. He starts.
Oh, well, born in the country, raised on rock and roll. Hank with the music, Dave, and die my soul.
And off he goes. It's
shake it, shake it, shake it. That's what he said.
Did you have a tune with him?
I did. I mean, I played with him on the lyrics board. And it's not obviously the ideal setting to have a jam with him. But I subsequently met him and discovered that the thing to do is not to sit down at a piano with him. I don't think he's too fond of other piano players. He loves guitar players and sax players. But he's not too keen. But because of the circumstances of the lyrics board, he was sitting next to me on a bench seat. And just at the very end, an audience member got up to sing. I can't remember what the song was, but it was a fairly straightforward song. Like, I never felt more like singing the blues. And I was playing down here. Like, I never felt more like singing the blues. Something like that, you see. And he was saying, hey, that's fine. He was whispering in my ear. See, so I just moved up to here. More like singing. I said, come on. And he just starts. He starts rumbling with the left hand. And then the next thing, he sort of edges in, and I edge further up, and then suddenly he's... And he milled away, and he was marvellous. And then he just...
three notes left up here.
And I, yeah, oh, well, I didn't mind. I mean, I was thrilled just to get that close to watch just exactly what he was doing.
But what about the other end of the world of the piano? Let's look at it from the point of view of the piano tuner. Fergus Woods is a third generation piano tuner. Like most people in the trade, he doesn't play himself, maybe just get in the way of the job, but he's seen more of the instrument itself than many's the famous star. Here he is working with an old banger of a piano, probably more typical as an instrument than what we've been hearing up to now.
Like, the end product is always nice, like when you tune the piano and the person tries it over and they hear the difference and they're very pleased. Like, that's sort of satisfaction enough for me, like, you know. The biggest problem would be, most times, is the tuning pins or the rest pins would be soft, and that would make it nearly untunable, like, you know, it wouldn't stay in tune, you know.
Yeah.
But mechanically, the action in that, which is the mechanical part of the piano, can most times be reconditioned and put right. But this is the big problem, if the rest plank is gone or the tuning pins are slipping. Like, you know?
So this is the essence of the piano, this is the basic...
That's the basic, yeah, the pin block or rest plank, as it's called, you know. And that's the mainstay, because if they're loose, the piano just won't stay in tune, you know.
So this piano has seen better days, but it's
seen better days. It's in good condition, reasonably good condition, but it's just it's very old. The piano was probably 80 odd years old, you know. Mm. But as I say, mechanically it's a wee bit noisy, but mechanically it's in reasonably good condition, you know.
Yeah, you can get a noise on the keys.
Yes. Yeah, you can hear the noises behind the actual notes, you know. That's due to all the felts being slightly worn, etc., you know. So that's...
You've seen worse.
I've seen worse, yeah.
I've seen better.
And I've seen a lot better.
Yes.
a lot better, but however.
But I mean, the thing about the bass notes of this now are not great, sure.
They're not great, Julian. No. But they're not too... Again, I've heard worse, like, there's a bit of life left in them, you know.
Up around there, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, nice and crisp. Yeah, nice treble. A nice treble.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. We haven't done down there yet, so it sounds a bit wild.
And when you do the D minor chord up and down.
Yeah. Yes, like yeah.
That's exactly the, as I remember I said, that's exactly what the two guys in ABBA, that's what the start of one of their big hits. Wasn't it? Do that again.
This one is. No.
No, yeah. No, the D minor.
Oh, yeah. That one?
Yeah. Yeah, do it. If you do droop, droop. Back it down. Leaving ABBA and back with our two dueling pianists, Peter O'Brien and Billy Brown, the subject has turned to the Beatles.
I do a kind of a version of Lady Madonna.
I was going to say that, you would do that well.
You know,
that'd be your gig.
I'm a bit of it. It's kind of like a boogie. You could do this in F.
Polly thought of some good ones, didn't he?
Exactly, yeah.
Little stinker, he writes some great tunes, you know. But I still think they shot the wrong man in that band.
Many of us dream of playing the piano, but they tell you it's about practice, practice, and more practice. Ruth McGinley knows all about this.
Whenever you get up in the morning, whatever, when you go to the piano, your fingers are normally very tightened up. So really you have to start by warming up and loosening your fingers, normally by just do maybe some 5-finger exercises, just very slowly loosening up your muscles, just each one separately, working each finger so that the muscles in your hand know what's going to be coming up for the next few hours. Yeah,
and just like that. I mean, would you find that frustrating anytime like that?
Yeah, well, it's not very exciting sitting playing 5 notes on it singly, but really it has to be done, because really if you go in and you start practicing, say, whatever pieces, Liszt or Chopin, you could easily hurt yourself by not warming up your muscles properly.
And how would you work on from that then? Say, like, 3 or 4 minutes later, what would you be doing?
You could start doing some scales or something. Yeah. Maybe chordal practice and things like that.
How would you do chordal practice?
Just really playing lots of different chords and lifting your fingers up very high so that you're using all the muscles in your hands.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a hard time as well. It's one of the things about a pianist, that it's a lonely life, that you have to go into a room, lock yourself away and practice for hours, you know.
How long would you do? What's the longest you've ever been in a room?
Oh, a long time. Well, before competitions and concerts and things like that, there's days whenever I've just literally got out of bed, gone straight to the piano, had a few breaks, a few half-an-hour breaks, and gone back to bed again later on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many days would you do that for?
It depends. I don't know. The BBC competition earlier on this year, really, I did it for months upon end.
Did you?
Yeah.
But you won.
I won in the end. Yeah.
Then there's the other route to a different way of mastering the instrument. Forget the theory. Just play.
I find looking at these bunches of grapes anyway, it's sort of almost like a dyslexic thing. I find it difficult to read anyway in bunches. But I never learned the skill to read. And therefore, I can't play a melody because you need to be able to read to play, you know, nice melodies and chords, and you can buy sheet music. So again, it all relates back to sort of doing the, you know... The thrill. And you know, these little sort of frilly bits are about almost as much as I'll do with my right hand.
So you never knuckled down to the scales?
Never knuckled down to the scales. Was thrown out of the college of music because I had a very quick ear. There's a limit to it. There's a certain point where I can't hear very complex chords. But the simple stuff for exams, what I used to do is the teacher would play you. You had a book of six pieces and you could take three of any of these six, and they'd play them for you and say, what do you think? And I'd say, play it again, and you know, constantly playing and trying. I'd learn it off by heart. And one day she stopped me, the teacher, and said, where are you in the music? And I said, I don't know. I was milling away at the tune. I said, I don't know. She sort of called my mother in. She said, look, he's wasting your money and my time. Take him away. So that was the end of my, I was eight or seven or eight or something at the time. So that was it. And then I try to get smart, and I tried to get into people like Ray Charles, and I found him very hard. But I was able to learn some of them. But again, you see, I got caught into his great riffs. And especially that, I love that bit.
Peter O'Brien and Billy Brown are exchanging yarns on the subject of piano pests, the people who ask you to play tunes that you don't want to play.
One of the ones that you get most frequently asked for, I think, is probably New York, New York.
Oh, I...
Memories.
Yeah, but they're good because you can insist that the people, the requestors, sing them.
You can force them, actually, and then they might go away.
Sadly, sometimes they do not. No, they do not always go away.
And another one that's always asked, but it is actually a nice tune, is Summertime.
Aye, that's
every
right.
Girl in existence seems to want to sing Summertime. It's
every single woman, the minute she gets a drink, that's the first thing. Yeah. Up, you know. Up,
and they generally remember
off with the clothes on Summertime.
But Summertime and the living is easy.
I forget how it goes at the start, actually. But there's a lovely start on the original soundtrack, which throws them immediately, and they don't...
Yes,
normally it sends them... With their tail between their legs, back to their seats. I wish I could think of it.
What key do you generally do it in?
I think it's in G minor written anyway. That's it, I remember now.
There's another thing you can learn about piano players. That is, that just because you can play one type of music doesn't mean you can play another type, as John Keogh will tell you.
I like an awful lot of music, and there's an awful lot of music that I can't play. I dearly love to be able to play jazz. Mm. I can't play it. So I listen a lot, and occasionally I'll find little bits of it, you know, that I can manage. So I entertain myself by trying things out and maybe stretching myself a bit to see if I can manage it. But generally speaking, I don't. But I just love to sit down and play.
When you say you can't play jazz, why can't you?
Well, I mean, it's a peculiar technique. Again, because of my ear, I learned I'll give you an idea. Here's a song, an introduction. When somebody, now you can hear that, that's an awful lot different to what I was doing earlier on, and it's a lot of complex. There's a basic thing in jazz. I drive everything from the root note. If I'm playing a song in G, I'll drive it there from G, and it might be or it might be the, it might be a Jerry Lee Lewis thing, or it might be whatever, Chuck Berry thing. I drive everything from the root note. Generally speaking, in jazz, the chord is constructed from above. The chord is constructed from above the root note. So, you know, instead of playing a G like that, a jazz player would play sort of like a... And they're playing... So it's a sort of a thinking process where you're thinking in a top end of the chord rather than the note, the root note. Because I, you know, when you play pop music, you play with the bass player and you play through the root notes, and just over constantly, you know, 50 years or nearly 50 years.
You're thinking sevenths in jazz and
yes, and jazz players are thinking like, you know, there's a song in B flat. There's B flat for you. Now, the introduction chord is... would have to spend an awful lot of time clinically going chord by chord and then blocking out my natural instinct to play the root note. Yeah. And then the phone rings. And then whap.
Oh, a list. I don't like playing. I have a list. But it varies. It varies with the feeling, you know.
Yeah. Well, you forget about them until you're asked. You say.
No, I don't. At Christmas time, I think about them a lot because I know I'm going to be pestered with these dreadful songs.
Yeah.
So I have a big bowl on top of the piano. I know it's not the done thing in this country to accept tips, but I put a charity thing up and a bowl and a list. And if it got my way, I would have a card on every table with this scale of charges in which it would say, if you want to sing, it's a fiver. If you don't want to sing, it's a tenner, etc. So I write down the whole thing until we come to the songs I don't like. Danny Boy, 50 quid. Any Christy Byrne song, £10,000. Particularly... Patricia the Stripper, money wouldn't never induce anybody to try and play that. And that sort of thing. And it goes down. It's actually happened on one occasion. A waiter comes and says, guy on table 6 says, play Danny Boy. Tell him. And then he's back every 5 years, persists. These people persist, you know. Eventually the man himself starts to growl up, play Danny Boy. Tell the piano player to play Danny Boy. Eventually a face appears over the top of the upright, semi-drunken, leers down at me and says, are you going to play Danny Boy? It never occurred to me until I looked at the... He had a lapel badge, and I was trying not to look at his face so I wouldn't have to meet his gaze, you know. And I see this badge. It says, New York Police Department, Drug Enforcement Agency. Fair juice to him. He left a £50 note in the bowl, and
this
I still have his badge.
I think I may well start this policy myself. It's excellent.
It used to be like that button in the States. Probably still is, for all I know. All you did was play the piano and have a big hat.
Yeah, but it's amazing why people kind of do come along to you. When you're playing one of these restaurant gigs and says, I'm having a party on Saturday week, you know, would you like to come along? There'll be plenty of food and drink. You know, but actually that is no kind of bait at all whatsoever. I mean, it's almost tempting to avoid it, you know.
And I don't myself do things for money, but I certainly don't do it for food and drink either, you know. That's for sure. Awful.
It's the trials of a long-distance piano player. They can happen.
But our place, at least in the places that I play, I've noticed it's very subjective in actual fact, you know, because many a night I'm sitting here playing in really bad form, and the piano sounds dreadful, and it's uphill all the way. Something's happened to pedals. I've brought the wrong pair of shoes as well and everything else. Maybe the car was overheating on the way in, and I looked down, and there's these dreadful men with their ugly owl hats. It's their wives and their awful table manners. They don't know what they want, these people, you know, and I can looking at the watch. Oh, Jesus, another 45 years to go. Yeah. And then another night, everything's great, and you're playing stuff. The hair standing up in the back of your neck, you're playing stuff.
And then you enjoy it. Yeah,
beauty.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people are looking around the pillars, nodding their encouragement. And all of a sudden, of course, it's the same people that were there two or three Fridays ago. They've come back.
You know? Yeah, yeah. It's funny. You never can tell, really.
So what are you doing wrong?
Yeah.
When I was down in Doolin there recently, I came across this book, of Irish triads, which are kind of sayings that everything is divided in three. And they had this description of a harpist, but I think it applies in general to music. And the description was that the three functions, really, are the three ways you would recognise a harpist was that he would have a tune to make you cry, a tune to make you laugh, and a tune to send you to sleep. But it's a nice way of actually putting, because that is what music does. And there's very often an overlap in the kind of feeling that you get from a piece of music. Like if you listen to one of the later Mozart pieces, like some of his piano concertos, there are some bits that are sad, but there are other bits that are happy and, you know, very lively. And that's beautiful, pure music. But, I mean, sometimes when the bit is happy, you suddenly feel sad because you realise that a genius is so rare. I mean, there are so few geniuses in any sphere over the centuries. Like if you looked at, say, the 18th century, Mozart, Haydn, you know, you got two or three musicians that are geniuses in 100 years. And that's actually a very small number when you consider the number of people who have composed music and written music and play music. So these are great musicians. I think a great musician actually is only really recognised like maybe 20 or 30 years after they're really dead, because then you see that the permanence of what they've done will live on no matter what modern kind of things come in or what changes come in music. People will recognise, particularly musicians. I think musicians keep the flag of previous musicians more alive than anyone else, you know.
And one of those people that Peter O'Brien is speaking about is also one of his heroes, Fats Waller. Peter plays Fats's Handful of Keys.
That was one of the first ones I ever heard. I heard that in France that time I was about 17. So it was something like that that got me, actually, I think, into the playing other than the classical stuff.
I missed all that. I missed half of that, too.
So did I. Skipped a bit.
By total contrast, Billy, though, you could do a little country number first, couldn't you?
I'd rather not, actually. You really can't play country songs. It's better if you can get somebody to sing them.
What about Rachmaninoff?
There's one thing I do play.
Rachmaninoff?
Well, I'd rather play...
You're a country writer.
I'd rather play country than Rachmaninoff.
Sergi.
If only because the country lasts longer. You get a longer run, as usual. So why did he put it out? The only country song I'm allowed to play in the restaurant that people still cry over. There's two. There's Last Date. Do you remember it? Floyd Kramer did it, and it's the simplest thing in the world, but it can be done quite nicely. I'm not saying that I might be able to do it as nicely as he did, but it's a lovely tune, if I can think of it. Tears from them for that.
Piano would put me in good form of if I was, I'd play anything if I was in. I don't really have a favourite tune. I mean, at the end of the day, I suppose my favourite tune would probably be the one that I, a tune that I would always like to have played well and can't. You know, there's always something else there. I'm fairly sloppy and sentimental. I mean, I love people like Nat King Cole. He is in fact my favourite singer of all the male singers, and I listen endlessly to his songs. And of course, he's a marvellous piano player. He was a jazz piano player, so I like those sort of songs, and I like playing slow songs at home myself, you know. And I used to look for you along the avenue. Our hearts were carefree and gay. Hey, there's a wrong chord for you. I knew someday I'd find you somewhere along the way. And I think I probably would have, I think I would probably become a better piano player if I had the opportunity to play those sort of songs.
I don't know, I love some of the more simple Chopin pieces, Sibelius and whatever. Mm. Just things like the Chopin Nocturne, which everybody knows.
Oh, yeah.
It's the E-flat Nocturne. It's quite easy to play, but it's just so beautiful. It's such a simple tune, which really most audiences like. Maybe a lot of people that think that classical music is so heavy and whatever, but then when they hear pieces like the Chopin Nocturne, they can get into it.
It's about moods, really. And whatever the mood, there's a magic about what some people can do with an instrument like the piano. So back to our two pianos for an upbeat finish, a 12-bar boogie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bösendorfer.
Thank you, Mr. Steinway. And sons. Does yours have a son?
Can we take them home?
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.